Ahoy, Mets fans. Welcome to episode 284 of Mazin Avenue Audio, the official podcast of your SB Nation New York Mets site, Mazin Avenue. My name is Brian Salvatore, but I will not be joining you for the majority of this podcast. Instead, our friends Chris McShane and Steve Sipa are going to talk about the 2018 Mets first-year player draft. We're going to talk about the different picks and what Steve thinks of the draft. And yeah, that's going to be our show for this week. So next week, we'll be back talking about all the fun reality that is the 2018 Mets. I hope you can hear the sarcasm in my voice. It's been a pretty rough weekend and a rough week and a rough month, rough 2 months, whatever it's been. Anyway, let's look to the future and try and find some hope there. But before we do that, please go to AmazingAvenue.com. Check out all of our amazing draft coverage as well as the rest of the stuff on our site. We've been having a lot of really great stuff. Despite the Mets having a frustrating season, our site is still bringing you all the Mets news and information you could possibly need. You can also find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Amazing Avenue. You can find this show at blogtalkradio.com, on Stitcher, at Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. But please rate, review, and subscribe on Apple Podcasts if that is how you get your podcasts. That helps us quite a bit. And you can follow Chris and Steve on Twitter. They are at Chris McShane and at Steve Sipa, respectively. I am at Brian Nitzanap. And until next time, let's go Mets. Take it away, Chris and Steve.
All right. Hello, Mets fans. It is the draft week, and I think the way things have been going in the major leagues over the past week and change, it's not a bad thing to be talking about something that's not the major league team right now, and matter of fact, quite distant from that. But, you know, the amateur draft just wrapped up, and if you've been reading the site, which if you listen to us on the podcast, I assume you have, the coverage that we've had has been exclusively from Steve Sipa, who's with me here tonight on the podcast. And, well, Steve, thank you in advance for the rest of these draft profiles that you're doing, and obviously thank you for the ones you've already done, and thanks for coming on and talking to people tonight about, you know, what the Mets have done.
Yeah, I find it's fun. And like you said, it's a good way to not concentrate on the Mets.
Which, yeah, we will have plenty of other time to revisit that. But right now, you know, we're coming off the Nimmo episode, and now this, it's kind of like a nice break, I think, from, you know, what's been going on. But yeah, the Mets came into this draft with their best pick. It was the best pick under Alderson, right? Even though they had some down years, the number six pick was the highest that they had had.
Yes.
So yeah, they came into this draft in that position. The way the rules of it all go, they had more money to work with than they typically would have in the slot system. Coming in with a farm system that wasn't highly rated is probably a nice way of putting it. when you consider where everybody was on the system. So, just before we get into some of the individual guys and all that, when you came out of these few days of the draft, what was your first overall impression?
Oy vey, probably. It was not, I mean, who knows how these guys are going to pan out. In 4 years, we might be saying that this is one of the best drafts in history. But on first impression, it does not really seem like the Mets did very well here.
So, I guess, well, I guess we can run down, sort of the sequence of things as the Mets went about them in the draft. And we'll just, start with the first round. They were in this spot. They had this really high pick. You had seen, I guess, a few names linked to them. I forget who it was that it was, within a day or two of the actual draft happening, somebody had mentioned that they may pick Jared Kelenic, which is what they did. So none of the guys who I had seen linked to them had fallen beyond those first five picks. You know, there were a couple guys that everybody was saying, oh, if they get to the Mets, they have to take this guy. But they, you know, they wound up going with the high school left-handed hitting outfielder in Kelenic. So, you know, was it disappointing to you that those other guys didn't fall? And then I guess we can get into Kelenic himself.
Yes and no. I wasn't, I'll just go with each of those three guys. It was Alec Bohm, Nick Madrigal, and Jonathan India were the three main guys that could have possibly fallen to the Mets at six. And Madrigal is definitely the best hitter overall in this draft. But he's also 5'7" and weighs 165 pounds. And there's just a stigma against a player that small. Yeah, there's been guys that have had success. But to me personally, I feel like he was a player that you're just one leg injury away from losing his elite speed. You're one shoulder injury away from losing his elite bat. And then you have a guy that's just kind of there, an okay fielder with no power. And if either one of those two things are damaged, you know, those things are gone. Alec Bohm, he's a big power hitter, big time power. He'll probably hit for a decent average too, but outside of the bat, there really is not much. He's a third baseman, quote unquote. He's probably going to have to move over to first base relatively soon. And it's just not an exciting profile. A first baseman that could hit for power, whoop-de-doo. You know, there's a million of those. And India had a similar profile to Bohm in that he's a decent hitter, third baseman, has a little bit of power. He's probably going to stick at third. He's a bit more athletic than Bohm is. But with India, I felt that his helium was a little too powerful towards the end of the draft, if that makes sense. Maybe at five where he was picked, maybe is a little bit of a reach, in my opinion. He could have been a guy that, you know, if he was further down, I would have not batted an eye. But at five, I would have been a little, I mean, at six, excuse me, with the Mets picked, I would have been a little hesitant to snag him. But that's just those three guys.
Yeah, and I feel like, you know, you get into the draft, and especially with the way it's covered on MLB Network, you know, that they begin with these comps that can be ridiculous at times. and then it turns into this whole conversation. So you have a guy, and you don't want to necessarily write somebody off just because of it, but, you know, like you said, you have a guy who's 5'7", and the popular thing to do is to say, oh, Altuve is one of the best hitters in baseball, and he's short, so, you know, what if we comp this other guy who's kind of a short guy to him? And it's just not how it works.
It would make the draft a lot easier if it did.
but yeah, so with those guys gone, you know, the Mets did what they did. And before we get into him specifically, was there anybody at that spot who you were, you know, was your guy that, you know, you were disappointed that they didn't take instead of who they did?
Yeah, I would have preferred Matthew Liberatore. He was a left-hand high school pitcher. He eventually fell to 16. He was picked by Tampa Bay. He's projected to go, you know, the first, you know, 5, 6, 7 in that area. A lot of people were saying that he fell because of money concerns. You know, he's only in high school. He's very, very talented. But supposedly there are rumors that he's been giving to, you know, Tampa Bay people that he's willing to sign for under slot. The slot value at 16 is $3,603,000, and, you know, it's a little disappointing that if that was the case, that he was willing to sign for just a little bit less than, you know, the $3 million that the Mets were not able to Well, the Mets did not pick him.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that makes sense. And you know, as somebody who's maybe got a little more of a cursory sense of all this, you know, that was a name that had been out there a lot. And if it does turn out that he signs with Tampa for under slot, I don't know, that seems maybe a little less than ideal for the 15 teams that passed over him. And obviously some of them at the top may have had really good reasons to do that, but it just seems kind of strange that if that happens, that it's Tampa that ends up happening with. But yeah, I mean, so let's hope. We're certainly not rooting against him or anybody else in this draft, but let's hope that the guy the Mets took ends up being one that looks really, really good. They went with Jared Kelenic. He's from Wisconsin, so the Mets have cornered the market not quite Pacific Northwest, but the northern and western half of the country, where you don't typically see a lot of guys drafted out of. Left-handed hitter, 18 years old. He'll be 19 in July. What is this guy about? You know, the obvious comp here that you heard a lot was Brandon Nimmo. Is that justified based on, who he is as a player, or is it more they have a few major things in common and then it's an easy one to make?
They do have a few things in common. There are also things that they did not have in common when Nimmo was first drafted. But it is an apt comp, I guess, especially since Nimmo isn't, an all-star or anything like that. He's still just kind of coming into his own, but he still is a little bit still in development at the same time. But Kelenic is, he's a good hitter. He has some power. He could really turn on the ball. Strong wrists. The thing that separates him from Nimmo the most, Nimmo at the time also was a kind of a similar outfielder with some projectable power, but what separates the two the most is that Kelenic still needs to work a lot on recognizing breaking pitches and, differentiating balls that he's just kind of going to make weak contact on and balls that he could really drive. Whereas Nimmo at the time was a very good eye, even as a high school player. Defensively, they're pretty similar. At the time, Nimmo was a center fielder and Kelenic is a center fielder. Nimmo could still kind of play center field in a pinch, but he's kind of thrown off the position. He slowed down a little bit because of some injuries. And there are some, not concerns, but some think that in the future, Kelenic also has to position because he's going to fill in. He's 6'1", 200 pounds right now, so if he grows a little bit, depending on what kind of muscle he puts on, his speed might decrease, and if his speed decreases, it'll detract from his range. But some scouts and evaluators that are more bullish about that think that because he does take good reads and takes good routes to the ball and he has good instincts, that'll kind of counteract any loss of speed that he does have. If he has to move off of center, though, he does have a strong arm, and his bat, profiles well enough to be in right field. So it would be better off if he is not forced into the corner and is able to stay in center. But if he is, he profiles well there, so it wouldn't be the worst thing in the world.
Yeah, and, those things are, I think, pretty good compliments for a player, just because of the pressure that you have for offense at the corner spots, in the outfield and the infield, really, in the game.
And it's not like he was a reach or anything like that. Like, I'm talking about, I would have preferred that other player, but it's not like the Mets kind of came out of complete left field here and picked somebody that nobody had on their board in the first round. He's by far the best high school overall player available. and he does fit, you know, in the top half of the first round, which is where they took him.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, it's kind of interesting. I look back, and obviously there are a lot of different places that rank guys, but just was talking with a friend about the draft and looked back at what MLB.com had, you know, just after last year's draft, they posted a very early look at the guys who they thought would be first round material this year. So he was on there, and you know, it's not like it was a list that had a bunch of guys who disappeared, but of the people who were, you know, maybe projected to go high in the first round, he was one of the handful who had been there, you know, both at that time and coming into this year. So, you know, what that says about professional success, I don't really know. But, you know, just sort of backing up your point that there was a perception of this kid being good enough to go in that spot for a long time. And he maintained it over the course of his senior year in high school. So that seems encouraging to me.
On that point, and I don't know if it's a good thing or a bad thing, but because he comes from Wisconsin and there's really not that many opportunities to start playing, you know, they thaw out, you know, maybe late spring, I mean, like late April-ish, so the season is not very long. So he plays mostly on, like, exhibition and travel teams, so he hasn't really gotten exposed, if you want to call it that. So I think because of that, his stock had, there was less variance in his stock, if that makes sense. You know, he's only playing in certain exhibition games and on certain travel teams. So, you know, it's not like he has an entire spring's worth of, you know, bad at bats or, you know, bad things going on to drop his stock. You know, there's less events that scouts are seeing him at to make him drop.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that makes sense. And then I guess sort of turning that into his professional assignment, I think everybody's assuming the Mets will sign him. Where do you think he gets started in his professional career? That should be an easier word than I just made it sound like it was.
A lot of times, I know teams don't really like to have their top players actually play in the season that they get signed. But I think because of that, you know, he's still pretty fresh. So I'm sure that if they do sign him, he'll report to the GCL Mets all the way at the bottom.
Yeah. Yeah. And that still allows a guy an opportunity that, you know, if he gets down there and he just tears it up, he can always, you know, play for a different team within the system. But you know, it seems like minor league assignments aren't overly aggressive with, you know, this regime of the Mets. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, especially, you know, with Peterson, he was eased back. Kay, he was also eased back. Dunn, he had a kind of poor season last year, so instead of pushing him to Binghamton, they let him repeat at St. Lucie, and he was just today promoted to Binghamton. So you have, you know, a couple of months down there.
Yeah. Yeah. And that, I guess that's a topic for another day, but you know, that is somewhat exciting. anytime you have a guy who's taken that early and he gets up to AA, I feel like it's cliche a little bit, but you know, you really start to find out what you have in a guy when he gets up to that level of the minor league ranks.
Absolutely. I mean, that's basically knocking on the door. So,
right. Right. And we've got a couple other AA guys that we'll touch on toward the end of the episode here. But before we get to that, we'll get through the rest of the draft. So in the second round, I think I forget exactly where he was. Was it Buffalo Wild Wings or somewhere?
Yeah.
Wait, was it there? Okay. So, you know, you hear that the Mets take Simeon Woods Richardson, pitcher out of high school, and he had every expectation of getting drafted, but he's out at Buffalo Wild Wings with his friends. not expecting to get drafted as early as he did, you know, on the first night of the draft, and gets a call that he was selected by the Mets. So, you know, that none of that is to insult what he is as a player, but what's he about, and, you know, why was there this discrepancy in perception, I guess?
Well, basically, he is a raw but high upside prep right-hander. He his fastball, there's a little bit of discrepancy as to how good it is. He claims to have hit 97. Yeah, it sits in the low 90s, low to mid 90s or so. He claims to hit 97, but the highest that the pitch has ever been actually recorded at, like, exhibition games and stuff like that is 95. Not that big of a difference, but there kind of, I think, is a difference in perception between 95 and 97. Sometimes he kind of gets inconsistent with it, and he'll back up into the high 80s to low 90s. But he claims that those reports are basically just based off of one game, and that during that one game, it was a kind of relief outing anyway. But that doesn't really hold true, because in other games that he's played, the velocity hasn't held deep into games. So there's a little bit of, puffing there with him. But fastball aside, he does have an arsenal that's pretty big for any pitcher, let alone, you know, a 17-year-old. He has a curveball, he has a slider, he has a changeup. The curveball is his best pitch. It's a big 11-5 curveball. He can command it pretty good. And when he's able to consistently get on top of it, it's probably an above average to plus pitch. The changeup, it's projected to be about an average pitch or better. He doesn't use it much, but he doesn't have to. Again, he is still in high school. A lot of times in high school, these are kids that are just relying on their fastballs and maybe, you know, a so-so breaking ball. So the fact that he has a changeup is kind of extra. And then his slider, it's kind of sweepy lateral break, and he's had kind of problems commanding that. But because he throws the curveball and a slider, he could, you know, scrap one for the other and just focus on improving whichever one kind of works better for him. And he's a kind of fiery kid. There's a quote from his coach, which made me laugh. He described him as a mean rascal. And he has a very high baseball IQ. He likes to throw inside. He'll brush guys back. You know, he'll establish, you know, that he owns the plate. And, you know, it's a good attitude to have for, you know, a guy so young, because that's something that, you know, if he's starting at the bottom with that kind of attitude, then it's really only up from there when he's able to, you know, better control his stuff and can really lay it on the hitters.
Yeah. And let's see. I am not making this comp. I am just bringing this up because it's kind of I think you probably see it more with high school players in general anyway. But the fact that he's played third base and, you know, shown some power as a hitter, is there any hope that, you know, that there's any kind of two-way player in there? Or is that just kind of a nice anecdote for, you know, what his career will become?
That's most 99.999% of the time, whenever you're talking about a guy like a high schooler and his ability to hit, or vice versa, if he's a hitter and you're talking about his ability to pitch, most of the time it's whatever it is that the non-dominant one gets scrapped.
Yeah.
Because in high school, you know, most of the time you're pitching and you're playing a position very, you know, now that we have Green and Otani, maybe, you know, the exceptional athletes will be given more leeway as they start to, like, go up the minor league ladder. But still, I think for a player to be able to do that, they have to be, very exceptional on both sides.
Yeah.
And Richardson isn't.
Well, there you go. yeah, just in the new era – especially with Ohtani doing it at the major league level. And again, not throwing that out there as a direct comp, but just the overall concept of a guy doing both things, you know, and that and the Rays prospect, you know, it's kind of a new thing. Not that it had never been done before. Obviously, Babe Ruth had success in, you know, both roles, but something that we haven't seen a lot of anytime in recent baseball history. But yeah, so seemed like a cool thing to bring up with him, even though it's not really going to turn into anything. So then moving on from him, I guess, you know, the draft goes, you have the first two rounds on the first night, and then 3 through 10, and then 11 and beyond all the way up to 40. So, you know, we're not going to pull a marathon podcast in the Jeff style of,
yeah, those days are done
a few years back. So we're not going to go over every single guy on the list, but we'll segment it, you know, sort of, how they do in real life with the way these guys are drafted. So, rounds 3 through 10, you know, you've got this group of players. Who from that group stands out? You know, are there any guys, how many out of those guys are just sort of your average, you know, signings that happen in those rounds? What's the overall sense? And then, you know, are there guys who stand out in that group?
The Mets kind of go college, you know, reliever heavy in these rounds, you know, after the first couple of picks, and they were college reliever heavy again this year. The two picks that they made that stand out the most are their third pick, a second baseman by the name of Carlos Cortez, and their ninth pick, a right-handed pitcher by the name of Bryce Montes de Oca. That doesn't necessarily mean that either one of them are going to be good, though, unfortunately. Cortez, he was drafted by the Mets a few years ago, the 21st round out of high school, and he decided to go to college, so the Mets lost him, but clearly they still like him, and they drafted him again. He reminds me a lot, I think, of Dilson Herrera, who the Mets traded for Jay Bruce a couple of years ago. He's a kind of short middle infielder that has some sneaky power, you know. What makes Cortez stand out, though, is that even though he's a sophomore right now, so he can elect to go back to South Carolina University if he wants to, if he's not blown away by the Mets offer. But even though he's a collegiate player, he is kind of a utility guy without a home, because he's basically a jack of all trades. He plays basically every single position, none of them great, but, you know, good enough to be playing the positions. And he's ambidextrous to a crazy degree, as has been mentioned many, many, many times. He's naturally left-hander, but he taught himself to throw with his right hand. And when he's in the infield, he throws with his right hand. Then when he's in the outfield, he throws with his left hand. But either way, his arm is still kind of fringy. So he's probably going to stay at second base.
I guess you could say his arms are fringy.
Yeah, that's true. His arms are fringy.
But yeah, no, it's kind of a unique guy. You know, one of the things that you saw a lot of at the time he was picked was just people, you know, reacting to the fact that the Mets had had picked him before. Obviously, like this kid, you know, at this point, you expect him to sign?
I don't know. He didn't have a very good year. He started out the first couple of weeks, he was just in a really, really bad slump. And he did kind of break out of it, but at the end of the year, he hit 244, 369, 507. There's a little power in there. But as a sophomore, you know, he has some leverage, and he most likely can do better than that batting line. I don't know if he'll get that money, though, if he does go back. So he probably is better off just taking whatever the Mets offer him. And supposedly they're very high on him and might even offer him something a bit over slot, which I hope they don't. But it's a possibility. But yeah, it's probably in his best interest to just sign with the Mets for whatever they want to give him.
Yeah, and as far as the slot stuff goes, do you expect any savings on either of the first two round guys?
You might get a small amount of savings with Kalenic. The slot value is $5,500,025. And with Simeon Woods Richardson, I think that he is going to sign over slot. Supposedly, he has a commitment to Texas, and supposedly he's asking for a lot. So, which at the same time is kind of odd because he was not expecting to be picked so high to begin with. So,
yeah,
but
yeah.
There's lots of misdirection on the part of teams and the players and their families and whoever they're talking to. So, who really knows?
Yeah. Yeah, that makes sense. Anything else on Cortes himself or Deaca?
On Cortes, no, that's about it. Now on Deaca, he is very, very, very tall. He's 6'7". That kind of fits a profile the Mets like. They like big guys for whatever reason. He is a guy that his name has been in a lot of drafts. Coming out of high school, he was considered to be one of the best right-handers, one of the best prep right-handers available in the 2014 draft. And the White Sox picked him with their 14th round pick. But he didn't go, he didn't sign with them, and he went to the University of Missouri. And basically, he didn't really have a great time there. He was not really used that much as a freshman in 2015. And then in 2016, the next year, he basically recorded a single out and then missed the rest of the season because he had ulnar nerve transposition surgery. So when he returned in 2017, last year, he was okay. The biggest thing is that last year he was okay, and this season he was okay. The biggest thing that he, the biggest thing about him is that he basically walks everybody but strikes everybody out. He was drafted last year by the pick, but again he turned them down, and he returned to college, and he, in theory, could turn the Mets down this year. He's a redshirt junior, so he could go back to Missouri next season. I highly doubt that, though, because odds are you're not being drafted much higher than 9th round, and I don't think that he's going to be given much more money than whatever the Mets offer him. What makes him attractive, and that so many teams have gone after him, is that his fastball sits in the low to mid-90s. It touches the high 90s. It's even touched 100 a couple of times. And because he's so tall, he strides well, and it gives him good extension. So his pitches look like they're, coming in even faster, the whole Chris Young thing. And he complements it with a kind of wipeout pitch, a very sharp slider. It's above average to plus even. When it's, tight, sometimes it gets a little slurvy when he has trouble getting on top of it. And he also throws a changeup, but, he doesn't really need to go to it very much, and it's a below-average pitch. But a guy like that, there's a lot of ways that a guy like that could go. You could kind of – he is a starter primarily, so you could stick with him as a starter and see what happens. You could say, kid, you go into the bullpen, stick him in a bullpen, and in a year or two, he's theoretically ready for the major leagues because all he has to do is just throw a 100-mile-per-hour fastball. He's had, as was mentioned, his injuries in the past, so that could be a concern going forward too with him. So who knows? There's a lot of different possibilities, but he is, I think, a lot better, a ninth round pick than you're going to find in most places. Much more upside.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's exciting. And, you know, if it is a bullpen route that they send him on, it would be nice. And it's not like the Mets haven't brought up any good relievers through their organization. You know, Familia obviously came up that way. Pre-suspension, Mejia came up that way. But, man, it would be nice. It feels like so many other teams have guys come up and they just start pitching in the Major League bullpen and dominate. Met fan perception coming from me here, but it feels like it just doesn't happen that much with the Mets themselves. So, you know, anybody who sounds like they might be able to do that is, and I tend to be a little more focused on bullpen arms, I guess, than the average fan, but it's exciting to me. So sign me up for that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, if he does make it to the major leagues, though, he really is going to have to work on that control, because for as many guys as he strikes out, last year he struck out 9 per 9 innings. This year it was 10.7 per 9 innings. But he also walked 6.2 and 5.4. So,
yeah,
you know, it's the kind of the classic super arm that just throws so hard he doesn't know where the ball is going and is, you know, either effectively wild or is just completely wild and everything goes to hell. So hopefully it's more of the good and not the bad.
So yeah, that kind of brings us to the other, you know, quantity wise, the vast majority of the draft, but you know, rounds 11 through 40, these are the guys who, if you are tuning into the draft, you know, you're just getting an audio feed of a conference call basically, and you know, picks are made in rapid succession. It's a big field. What did the Mets do with that segment of the draft? And then I guess we can run down, you know, anybody who individually stands out from that very large group.
There's a couple of guys. One guy is Phil Capra. He's a catcher. And the only reason why he kind of sticks out is because he's from Wagner College. It's right here. You know, I could walk there if I wanted to. A couple of prep high school guys. There's Zachary Hammer. There's Jalen Palmer, there's Saul Gonzalez. They were selected at 21, 22, and 23 in succession. There's another guy that the Mets took, Jake Mangum. I don't really hope I didn't butcher that, but
yeah, I think Mangum, like
yeah,
like what's his name from Pavement?
Who else? Right after him, there was another prep. Basically, they signed again, you know, as they usually do, a bunch of kind of not low upside, but basically a bunch of boring college seniors and juniors, and they sprinkled in a couple of high school kids here and there.
Okay.
The thing is, though, I feel like this year the high schoolers that they did pick were drafted a bit later. I know last year they picked a couple of high school kids between rounds 11 to 20. This year they did not pick any. Oh, no, they picked one, excuse me. And, you know, the further down you go, either it's because there's less likely that the kid's going to sign, or, you know, there's just bigger flaws, even though they're high school kids and they have a lot of projectability, whatever. But it just feels like the high school guys that they did go after this year they don't have the upside that the high school guys that they picked last year, which is a little unfortunate because the lowest levels of the minor leagues Mets system it's good, but, you know, there's just so much variability and so many of these guys are just projection alone that, you know, if somebody's fastball doesn't, you know, go from 88 to 92 like you want it to or something like that, then he goes from being an interesting guy to just kind of like, oh, he's just there. And you need to restock the bottom pretty quickly when stuff like that is happening a lot.
Yeah. Yeah, so that, I think, you know, sums up what they did in this draft. And, you know, at the top, we were talking about just sort of what the perception of the system was coming into it. You know, I guess my question is, has anything changed as a result of this draft? Obviously, you know, you need to see these guys get into professional games. But, you know, what is the state of the system at the moment? You know, we've had a couple months of the minor league season with some of the other guys, and we'll touch on Pete Alonso, Jeff McNeil in a minute. You know, but where is the system overall at this point in time in your mind?
The needle hasn't really moved. Coming into the draft, I was pretty excited because the Mets are getting, you know, pick number six. You have to be particularly bad to get pick number six. Maybe they'll be that bad again this year. Who knows? But it's a high pick. And then the next couple of picks, 48, 83, and 110. That's not exactly four in the top 100, but it's pretty close. And with those, you know, the best picks that they had, those top 100 guys or so that are across the country and in Canada and in Puerto Rico, I don't think that they maximized the talent that they could have picked. And it would have been in those four picks that you would have found the real difference makers in the system. Other picks, you're gonna find role players and contributors afterwards. You know, the unexciting kind of junior and senior college relievers, they have their place. The guys like, you know, Tim Peterson, Paul Sewald, they're semi-effective major league contributors right now. But they didn't really move the needle when they were drafted. And nobody really that the Mets picked is going to move the needle. And that's a little disappointing.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, it's when you go through a season like they had last year, you know, it would be nice if the silver lining was that you would get something out of it that would be that good. Like, I don't know the Giants system well, but it felt like with their selection of Bart, you know, they made an exciting move, one that might change the perception of where they are. Is that fair to say with them?
Yeah, I mean, Bart is definitely an impact player. Kalenicki might be, you know, just because he's a high school player and he's a kind of raw one at that, it's going to take a while for him to develop and be, you know, to the minor league rankings and eventually to the major league team. But like a guy like Bart, really any kind of like high upside college player like that, he's going to make an immediate impact on, you know, minor league rankings and just the system in general. As things stand now, Kalenic is probably like 5 to 10, somewhere in there, in the Mets' top 10 prospects. So we'll see.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, just before we go, we wanted to touch on the two guys who I mentioned a couple minutes ago. You know, the Mets obviously are in the spot that they're in. And let's just say Adrian Gonzalez and particularly Jose Reyes aren't exactly lighting things up at the plate. So, you know, you've seen and heard probably some Mets fans, much more so with Peter Alonso at first base. And then maybe some fans who are a little more into the minor league system, bringing up Jeff McNeil, who's you know, an infielder as well, had some, I'd say he had some support. I don't know if hype is necessarily the word, but he had some support among our writers going back a few years. But it was a guy who kind of struggled to stay healthy, but has been really producing at the plate. We'll start with Alonso. You know, is it time? He's got an OPS that's still over one. Hitting lots of home runs. I think he had 15 coming into today. I don't know if he hit any others in the last few hours, but, you know, is it time to promote him? and just see what you have at the major league level, and at the very least just hope that it's better than what Gonzalez gives you?
Well, I have tickets to the Binghamton and Trenton game on Saturday and Sunday, so Friday is not the time to call him up.
All right.
Saturday is not the time to call him up. Sunday is not the time to call him up. Anything after Monday, that's good. Go ahead and call him up.
Yeah, and you know, that kind of works. I like the personal aspect of that, but you figure they're not going to call him up and throw him into the Subway Series, as it, you know, as overrated as it may be as an event at this point. You know, maybe not where you want to have a guy make his debut. Then again, some other debuts have happened in that series, and they've turned out just fine. But yeah, it doesn't seem like that would be the most likely spot. But, you know, obviously the numbers are there. Is there anything with him, you know, on sort of just a descriptive side that is particularly encouraging in terms of what he's doing?
I think that he's, you know, he's been killing the league basically since he was promoted last year. I think he was in like six games in Binghamton last year and he hit over 300, and then that's continued since then. But he's, I know people have called it a slump. I'm not going to call it a slump, but he's slowed down a little bit. He hasn't been hitting as well for the average, but he has been walking a lot and he hasn't been striking out much. And I think that has been his biggest test to date, and he is passing that. You know, he's getting a lot of guys aren't pitching, you know, around, they're pitching around him basically. You know, he is one of the league leaders in average and is one of the league leaders in home runs. So if you give him something he can hit, he's going to hit it. And pitchers obviously don't want that to happen. And now that he's getting, pitchers are being more selective with him. He's not, you know, he's not falling into their traps. He's not expanding the zone. He's not striking himself out. He's not making weak contact and getting himself out. He's willing to take those pitches. He's willing to draw walks. And that, I think, is very important just for his maturation as a pitcher. I mean, as a player, because at the major league level, pitchers are obviously going to, you know, if you're hot, they're going to pitch around you. They're not going to give you good stuff. So he's showing that he can do that, and that basically is like the final hurdle for him, I think. He really doesn't have anything left to prove. You know, I don't know the nitty-gritty, you know, is he susceptible to change-ups down and away? Is he, you know, susceptible to curveballs that drop in? You know, whatever. I don't know. Those, you know, that stuff still needs to be proven. But in a general sense, he is showing that he can, you know, go with the flow, and if pitchers aren't going to give him anything, he's not going to try to force anything to happen.
Yeah. Yeah. Hey, that all sounds good to me. And then, you know, with McNeil coming into tonight, he's hit 13 home runs. He also has an OPS over one. Should we be buying that, you know, that this is legitimately who he is, and, you know, this is, I think, an example to maybe compare stat lines. McNeil's a little bit older, but, you know, is this who he really is as a hitter? And is he knocking on the major league door because of what he's doing in Double A at this point?
It was 2 years, I guess it was, when we heard that, you know, McNeil added all that muscle.
Yep.
And Jeff and Greg saw him, you know, one of the first games at Binghamton, and he looked legit, and then he got hurt, and then, you know, he came back, and then last season he got hurt, he missed a lot of time again, and it's not really a case of just older guy is, you know, more physically capable, more advanced than, you know, the players that he's playing against. He legitimately, you know, changed his body. He added a lot of strength. He adjusted his swing to compensate for all that extra strength. After the injuries that he had the last couple of years, hopefully he's adjusted his, you know, training regimen as well, and diet and whatever else. But it's a legitimate change in his profile, so there's no reason to think that you know, he's gonna get promoted and then suddenly lose 30 pounds of muscle. and all that power.
Right.
You know, if he ever gets promoted. So there is some legitimacy there. I don't know. You know, as a prospect, he's not as advanced or as good as Alonso, who I think, you know, could handle major league pitching, you know, tomorrow if he was brought up.
Right.
McNeil, I'm not so sure about that. But, you know, the only way is that you're going to find out is if you let the guy do it. And really, you know, the Mets, maybe some people are kind of holding on to some glimmer of hope, but I don't think it looks very good. And why not let him play? You know, the whole thing with Reyes is not adding any positive value that McNeil, you know, would be dragging down if you substituted the two guys. If McNeil sucks, it's not like Reyes, you know, he's going to suck just as much. So.
Right. Well, yeah, I mean, and the way things have been going this year, it's hard to be, you know, worst case scenario, you're one of the worst five hitters in baseball. Okay.
Yeah, I mean,
you know, that's not really the end of the world. So, yeah.
If McNeil, say, he becomes the worst hitter in baseball, well, he's replacing the worst hitter in baseball. So you're not really changing anything much.
Right. So, yeah, on that note, you know, hopefully we'll see those two guys get major league chances sooner rather than later. Obviously, everybody who we talked about in the draft, especially with the Mets going with a high school guy or two high school guys, really, with their highest picks. You know, these aren't guys that we expect to see at the major league level in the short term future. And that's fine. There's nothing wrong with that. But yeah. You know, hopefully, I think, you know, there's a good sense of what they did in this draft. It probably fits in pretty well with what they've done in years past. You know, nothing shocking really there. But yeah, we hope to have, you know, enlightened you listeners for, you know, what the Mets have done here and maybe given a little bit of hope with what we'll see from Alonso and maybe McNeil. And yeah, so until next time, we will eventually talk about the major league team again, but if they keep, you know, going at the pace they're going, we might just keep finding topics that aren't them. But yeah, so and as always, you can find us on Twitter. I'm Chris McShane at Chris McShane, Steve Sipa at Steve Sipa, STEVESYPA. Just in case you didn't know. And yeah, Steve, thanks for chatting tonight about all this stuff.
Yep, no problem. Like I said earlier, it's fun stuff. So maybe you have to be an extreme weirdo to find it fun, but then, you know, I'm a weirdo.
Hey, there you go. That works.